And one of the first things we're going to ask you to do is, on that piece of paper, list one, just one, social justice issue that you're most concerned about. Okay, so just one social justice issue you're most concerned about. And it could be on the same side or on the other side, you're going to list one barrier that's standing in the way that comes to mind, okay?
Right.
So one social justice issue you're most concerned with and one barrier that's standing in the way that comes to mind right on that same piece of paper.
Tana's walking around with paper. If any of you need any, if you throw a hand up, she can get to you. Oh, in the back.
And you're going to hang on to that, and then you can use that to kind of take notes throughout our discussion.
Right.
And then we will collect those at the end. So, but we'll go ahead and get started. My name's Jason, and we were introduced, so we won't get into all that. And Dr. Mays is here. We help coordinate Race Muncie. I see some familiar faces. Mm-hmm. So it's great to see some familiar faces that have participated in our group before. We've been meeting for over 2 years, and RACE stands for Reconciliation Achieved Through Community Engagement. We typically meet once a month on the first Tuesday, but we've been known to meet at different times and more than once a month and take a couple months off. So.
And in different locations.
And in different locations. And that's very important. We want to meet in different locations, so we're making sure we're reaching out to every neighborhood and community we possibly can. We don't want to ever have someone come to us and say, well, you always meet over here and it's really hard for us to get to that meeting. So we do move around a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested in learning more, we have a Facebook group page if you search Race Muncie, and we also have a Twitter handle at Race Muncie, and we always post updates and stuff like that.
Right.
So the idea with Race is we're encouraging reconciliation in our community. And that doesn't necessarily have these specific boundaries or identities that we're really trying to go after. When I know that we all have different definitions of reconciliation, at least through conversation, that's what I've learned. And the idea with reconciliation is healing in our community, specifically Muncie. That's why I wore my Muncie shirt, just to put it in your face. So you say, Muncie, Muncie.
You should have told me.
Oh, yeah, should have got you one. But healing in Muncie is very important, okay? My family and I, we were watching the Trayvon Martin case unfold a couple years ago. And after that incident and after that verdict, we were weeping. And my children and I were weeping, trying to process what was going on. And it was at that point that we'd kind of come up with the idea to start doing something more in the community, to promote healing and to promote discussion. And so some of the early conversations about Race Muncie were really connected to current events. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, lots of events continue to happen. So that's why we feel like meeting as much as we can and encouraging as much participation as we can promote healing. And we want to promote healing through community engagement, through relationship building, and through interaction with one another in a digital age, right? It's really easy to comment on the Star Press threads or on Facebook pages and Twitter. It's really easy to hide behind a computer screen. But the real work is every day, in the moment, here and now, building relationships with our neighbors and people that aren't our neighbors.
Right.
So.
And it certainly, I think, takes on the form of relationship building and interacting with one another. But also a part of reconciliation is thinking about and fighting against those institutional structures that perpetuate unequal outcomes, right, for lots of different kinds of people. So certainly we're building a skill set so that we can connect with one another, but it's also a skill set to get out and hold our city officials accountable. If there aren't things that are happening, what can we do to fill in the gap rather than saying, oh, I said something about it. Saying something isn't enough now, right? We have to do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's multiple layers. What we've found with our group, and we've met for over 2 years now, is that everyone's at a different place. Everyone is coming from a different background. Everyone's had different personal experiences. So you can't just expect everybody to kind of come from that same place and move forward. And a lot of people put a timeline on it. They don't have patience for this healing process and this work. But really, the timeline is undefined. You cannot rush this. I mean, and one of the great parts about this book, thanks to Wayne Meyer for letting me borrow this, I promise I'll return it, is, you know, talking about the context and the historical context of Reconstruction, and what our country has gone through through a period of time. And we each experience our American history differently, you know, riding on the waves of 4th of July and how people celebrate freedom in America and those types of things. So, and that's why, you know, as Renee had said, relationships and action. But we're constantly talking about the idea of white fragility, which is why we included that in the topic. And then in this book, Reverend Barber references social amnesia. So those are some things that we thought were important to bring to the surface and provide some examples of that. And I'll just read kind of a definition of social amnesia as a barrier to reconciliation. And it's basically when you aren't informed or you say things aren't a big deal and that the past is the past, right? You've experienced history and a life differently from another. But you know, I've heard tons of white peers say, well, it's time to move forward, you know, in explaining to somebody that you know, I'm tired of hearing about, you know, race and racism and all this. It's time for everyone to move forward. Those types of things is in a way a social amnesia. You have the privilege to choose not to worry and feel the pain of the past, right? So social amnesia is something that, you know, we really need to think about. Especially when we look at the structural racism and the structures that are in place, the power structures that are in place that are preventing lots of growth. So
even within that, Jason kind of hit this a little bit. So there's this idea of being colorblind or culture blind. Who knows what that means? Right, so the idea of being colorblind would be saying, oh, well, I don't see color, or I don't see culture, right? So when you look at me, that would mean I'm transparent, right? Like, you don't see this beautiful brown skin in front of you. You don't see none of it, right? False, you do, right? You see it. You see it. So we have to call it what it is. And part of, I think, the challenge with it, because I think when we say, oh, I'm colorblind or oh, I'm culture blind, like, the idea is, like, I want to get to know people, right? I want to get to know who they are. Well, part of who they are is their culture. And by saying that that doesn't matter to you, you're kind of negating a history, right? You're saying, oh, that doesn't matter, you're here today. Well, we're informed by those things. So really what we should say is something like, I want to get to know you, your history, like the things that are important to you. I want to affirm that. And I want to recognize that we might be different from each other in some ways. And I think that's awesome, right? When did different become bad? It's not. We designed, this country designed different as being bad, but it's not. So we have to kind of retake that word or take back that word and say, no, different doesn't mean bad. Different, like, legit means different. Webster agrees with me.
Let's still make it difficult. Yeah, and so social amnesia, it's something I thought about recently at the 4th of July, and I had a conversation with some friends at my church at Urban Light, and we were talking about what the 4th of July, you know, meant to African-American families and community, And then we talked about Thomas Jefferson, you know, and then recently there's been these national headlines that Thomas Jefferson had a mistress.
Who was his mistress?
Yeah, who was his mistress? That? It was someone.
I'm legit asking you, who was it? Okay. So I think in order, one, let's challenge that, right? To be a mistress means you're human, right? And you have rights, like you can kind of engage or not engage. Sally was legit an enslaved African. She didn't have rights. She was raped. Like, let's call it what it is. You can't be a mistress if you're enslaved. You don't have power in that situation. Right, she didn't volunteer to do it. Right, she wasn't engaged in that. But when we see headlines like that, there's that social amnesia. Well, she engaged in it. Like, of course. Of course it was permissible and okay with. It wasn't. It wasn't. We have to challenge ourselves and our peers when they say, oh, well, the mistress or this. You mean the enslaved African that was held at plantations, which are also known as prisons for Africans?
And we have history saying that that relationship started as early as 14 years old and that she had children with Thomas Jefferson. So here is a founding father, you know?
Right.
And 4th of July, boom, fireworks, barbecues, beer. But, you know, a lot of times at those celebrations, I only see my white peers because it's different. And I think that's something we really have to address. And, you know, just it's 2017 and we're still whitewashing history and, mm-hmm. and pretending that things don't exist. And mm-hmm. so, you know, how do we navigate that water? How do we? And even the museum at Monticello didn't really talk about that relationship until now. That's the new article that came out and how they're going to try to tell the real story. Well, why did it take that long?
Right.
You know, how do we heal? How do we really heal and promote reconciliation if we're constantly pretending and consciously choosing to forget the real history of our country? So, and then the other term that we wanted to really throw out is white fragility. So some just basic definitions of white fragility is where a minimal amount of racial stress for white folks becomes intolerable. The response can be defensiveness, which can look like anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, and leaving the stress-inducing situation. So we feel like, we've talked a lot about this, how we feel like this is really hindering our progress. This is really hindering our ability as a community, and we're specifically Muncie, our ability to heal. And it's this just defensiveness that comes up when certain words come to the surface or when conversations come to the surface. And so we really want to lean into that discomfort, because for me, the truth of the matter is, if you're comfortable every day, right now, in most situations, you're really not getting into the work that we're talking about. That's a privilege. And when you start to get out of that comfort zone, I'm here to tell you that's a good thing. You know, and I think Renee, you know, counseling and things like that, you talk about, I mean, when you're having a good session, you get outside that comfort zone.
Right. That's where the real work happens, right, when you don't feel safe.
And I know that I didn't really start to transform personally from a place of privilege and being raised in that kind of bubble until I left Muncie. And, you know, I was having a discussion about that quote from Mark Twain that says, you know, to overcome ignorance and bigotry, you really need to leave your corner, right? You need to go and travel. And it wasn't until I moved to Brooklyn, New York City, or Buffalo, to where I felt uncomfortable when I was the minority for the first time in my life, that I really started to change and transform mentally. But it was a lot of work. It was definitely a lot of work. So, did you have anything on white fragility, leaning into it more?
Why don't you talk about the terms that kind of get used?
So there's these terms that, as we started to unpack this, and we unpack this quite a bit, white fragility and even is being used more often, and we wanted to use that instead of white privilege. White privilege is being talked about quite a bit, and words really matter, how we use them and those types of things. So even the word privilege kind of, you know, has this tone to it that kind of talks about financial merit and different things like that. And that is a word, though, that still makes people uncomfortable, especially mm-hmm. white people. But the fragility of it is when you start to feel like overwhelmed and become defensive. But I wanted to read a quote from a great article that I posted on our event page regarding this topic. And it's by Anna Kegler in her blog, The Sugar-Coated Language of White Fragility. So it's pretty good. But as an example, as an illustration of the above, let's look at Donald Trump. See that right there? There's an immediate reaction, right? But here's the thing that I'm going to stop and tell you. We are Donald Trump. How we perceive him are things about ourselves. We need to come to terms to that. It's right. really easy to demonize Donald Trump. He makes it extremely easy. He does. But what we need to realize is this is a reflection, like we said in the meditation. We are a prism, and what we're seeing and witnessing is a reflection of white supremacy and white structure and white domination and white oppressorship. So we need to really think about that. But I thought that would be good to put that in there. So as an illustration of the above, let's look at Donald Trump. Trump is known for speaking in vague generalities and declaring simplistic solutions for complex problems. He avoids policy and fact-based conversations and gets angry and disgusted at the drop of a hat. Now imagine that when it comes to conversations on race, white people in America act like Donald Trump. We generally lack knowledge, but we always have an opinion. I'm going to say that again.
Mm-hmm.
We generally lack knowledge, but we always have an opinion. That really resonates with me. We lack the skill set for nuanced conversations, so we pretend they aren't necessary. When we can't avoid, we deflect, or we get upset. We're thin-skinned. So that's something we need to think about as far as how we approach a situation. How are we growing personally?
Right.
Like I said, it's super easy to demonize someone like Donald Trump. But we need to stop and take a second and reflect on how that is reflecting who we are as
right.
people.
Can I add a story?
Yeah,
and I think
absolutely.
The story makes sense. So if I can share a story or an experience of mine with you. So a friend of mine from high school is getting married, and they're getting married in Alaska, and I was a part of the wedding party, which is great. Yay, weddings. So we were having dinner with family outside. And future husband's family, extended family, grandparent, everybody was there, and her family was all there too. And I quickly noticed, one, in Alaska there aren't a lot of people that look like me. Okay. But I was definitely the only chocolate chip in that sugar cookie at the table. it happens, right? So we're sitting at the table, and grandpa starts talking, and I'm like, okay, what are we going to do today? And he starts talking about how the U.S. was way better, like, before Abe Lincoln, and how slavery, like, was really important, and it really, like, helped the economy, and all the while, this brown face is staring back at him like, what? And he just keeps going on, just keeps digging, right? Just keeps saying things that are off the wall and basically saying, racism, good, it was better back in the day. Whatever we have going on now is not the bee's knees. That entire table said nothing. How many of you have been at a table where you've said nothing? Right? And then, because I'm like, I'm out, I peaced out, right? I might get lost in the woods and ride a bear to Anchorage and get out. So I get up and leave the table. I call my sister immediately, and I'm like, girl, you will not believe what just happened. And then my friends come, and they're like, oh, hey, Renee, like, we saw you got up. Yes, I did. I tried to have a conversation with them about, like, that wasn't okay. Like, what happened wasn't okay, and what you did wasn't okay. And they shut it down because their racial stress was too much. And then they explained away how racially innocent it was. So at my expense, I don't get to be a human. I don't get to be a person that has dignity because grandpa needs to be okay. Or because we need to be okay. I don't want to feel the stress of racism, or I don't want to feel the stress of sexism, anything. You just need to get over it. We're good white people. That's essentially what they said. So it goes back to that white fragility, right? Mm-hmm. I want to get out of the situation. I want to silence it. I don't want to engage because that doesn't... I'm for black people, but not like that. I'm not willing to do that.
And it's easy to compare that the binary concept of good and bad and
right.
duality to say, well, I don't belong to the KKK, so I'm a good white person, right? That's oftentimes, like, and just the other example, comparing yourself to Donald Trump. I'm not Donald Trump. I'm a good white person.
I'm a liberal. I'm a good white person.
Yeah.
I'm progressive. I'm a good white person.
All the words that we create to kind of ease our way into white comfortableness. These are things that we really need to check and we really need to talk about. And there are a lot of great resources out there. At our Trans 101 thing we did here a couple weeks ago, G said, you know, Google is free. Well, in most cases, right? I know there's some net discussion.
Go hang out in the parking lot at McDonald's.
Yeah, some places do offer it, public libraries still. But there are ways and resources to get through this. But some of the words, because I know on a time constraint, but some of the words we need to challenge are how we use diversity. You know, it's just become a buzz term to say, you know, we need to be more diverse and things of that nature. These are things that we need to really look into. Ava DuVernay, she's the director of Selma and 13th. She says, diversity is a medicinal word that has no emotional resonance. So just something to let marinate. Even white supremacy, you know, it's kind of a buzz term now, and we like to compare, white people like to compare themselves to white supremacists as being good or better than a white supremacist. But if you even think about the term white supremacy, what also do you associate supreme with? I always get nachos supreme, which means I get everything on it, you know?
Not nachos.
But just supreme is kind of a good word, right? How is that connected to this white domination of white supremacy? So even maybe using more realistic terms like white domination, mm-hmm. Or white oppressorship instead of white supremacy. Another one that we need to keep in mind is inclusion. It's easy, and we've even talked about inclusion and being more inclusive with our race group and our mission statement and things like that. But as mentioned in that article that I shared online, is who is including who? Who does this place belong to? Right. It sounds like an act of welcoming instead of everyone being on equal footing, and I guess that's what's happening. Predominantly white spaces are trying to be more welcoming without having to relinquish white ownership of the space. Right. So that's something to think about with these words and these buzzwords.
And even even with it, we might use that term and say, oh, we're inclusive, right? We're welcoming, meaning that you want diversity to come to you rather than doing the work and going out there and building relationships. It's easier to say, oh, well, if you come to us, we'll be nice to you. Maybe. We don't know that, but to move beyond inclusion means get up out of your chair and do something.
Yep, and that gets covered a lot in Barber's book, and you see him on the news every day getting arrested and standing up for Medicare, right, and all these different things. Get outside the building. That's definitely where we move from that. We got to get in the streets. We got to get into our neighborhoods and our communities and community centers, our schools, you know, all these different things that we're talking about. I know you had a point about allyship, too, that you wanted to talk about.
Right. So how many of you might consider yourself an ally? An ally for racial justice, an ally for... Okay, I see lots of hands. Who told you were? Anyone? So a few people were told by somebody that they're an ally. I would encourage you to erase this term from your vocabulary. Because allyship is kind of passive. And if no one told you, like no one from that community in which you're supposed to be an ally for told you, you don't get to decide if you're an ally. Does that make sense? That's taking power away from the community that you're supposed to be helping. Instead, we should think about being accomplices, meaning I'm active, I'm out in the community, I'm doing stuff. Hopefully, I'm standing alongside people that I'm supporting, I'm acting in solidarity, mm-hmm. right? Allyship, there are some people that I know that consider themselves allies in what they do. They post things on Facebook. That's the extent of their allyship. You're not an ally. Facebook scholars have no space here, right? If you're really going to commit to doing the work, you're committing to action, not just being a person and using that name and saying, I'm an ally because I'm nice to people. You're not. Go out and do stuff, right?
Yeah, and that really hit me. Renee was, you know, breaking that down for me, and I raised my hand. I was like, oh yeah, I'm all about that, yeah. But I've come to realize, you know, with moments and just personal experiences, my family's biracial, and you would not believe what happens in 2017. At the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You would not believe what happens when meeting with a bank. These things still exist. And if you take one of us out of the equation and at some point one of us enters, things change. And that's not right. But what are we going to do about it? How are we going to address these power structures? It goes back to the social amnesia. We like to forget about the historical context of things. For instance, redlining, segregation. There are still Muncie neighborhood covenants that said a colored person can't live within these boundaries. Still in the neighborhood covenants. federal law, you know, gets rid of that. But wouldn't it be a great step in reconciliation for our community to eliminate that language? Mm-hmm. How would you feel if you lived in that neighborhood and that was still in the language of your covenant? You know, these are things that we will never heal and move forward as a community until we address all of these concerns and these issues. And we have to stop pretending that they don't exist and denying that.
Right. We have to call it out, or as Tanya said a few weeks ago, we have to call people in, right? So calling people in means I'm going to engage in a conversation with you and talk about why something that happened is problematic. And like, really, like, let's learn about this together rather than calling out and shutting down, right? But along those lines, I will say, so a part of white fragility, there's this this notion that people of color or people with vulnerable identities, their job is to educate you. It's not. People can educate or be a part of that process if they want to, but you're not entitled to my story. But sometimes people act that way mm-hmm. and get angry because I don't want to do it. You can't ask for people to labor for you, especially when there's Google, right? You can get on the internet and find the things.
And you can't force your timeline and your impatience on other people, right? You know, it's like white people often want everything to just go forward so it can be comfortable. That's often the experience I see. And everything I say here is a reflection of what I've dealt with daily. We try to force our timelines, our whiteness timeline, on society and moving forward in our community. And that's not right. It's not right. Because pain and healing, anyone who's dealt with pain and healing and some sort of instance that has caused great pain, it doesn't just heal overnight. And sometimes that wound remains for a long time and maybe forever. And so we oftentimes just try to force these timelines on people.
Right.
Which we're dealing with the timeline right now, so we might want to get in some action
steps. You're right. So although I can't necessarily tell you exactly what to do and how to fix it, right? That would be really cool if I could. And I get paid a lot of money, which even better. But we can think about maybe how we navigate spaces. So in the community, how are you engaged with diverse communities? When you look at your friendship circle, who's there? Do people look like you? Do they agree with you? Are they liberals? Who are they? Are you intentionally going into spaces that people don't look like you? Are you kicking it in whitely community? Are you partnering with them on things? Are you asking yourself questions about, in my community organizations, what does leadership look like? Are we raising up diverse leadership? Are we saying like, oh, well, if they want to do it, they'll come? Well, how have we made it a space in which celebrates that and welcomes people to come, but also intentionally brings people up? Those are important things to think about. How are you spending your money? Are you supporting businesses that are owned and operated by diverse individuals? Or are you going to Chili's? That's fine. Chili's is good. I like their soup. But your money means something here, right? In supporting and being an act of economic social justice, right? Sorry, I just did a lap. It felt good.
She's getting her steps in. There's a lot of people here. What boards do you serve on? What organizations do you help lead? What companies have you started? How do you incorporate this message that we're trying to get out there, this healing? You know, who makes the decisions in your community or in your organization? And how can we raise up more people to participate in these leadership opportunities?
I saw a lot of young people here, right? So I get a sense that there's a community here that really loves and cares about youth, right? So when they're in school, are you asking for diverse curriculum? Are you asking for people to be represented in ways? Are you challenging the school-to-prison pipeline? Are you looking at that and saying, well, okay, my kid goes to East Washington, and like they're doing okay, but how are the other kids doing? Are you asking yourself that question? Are you asking teachers like, hey, my kid doesn't see themselves in the curriculum, or my kid needs to learn more about diversity. How is that incorporated? Right? Who gets to take AP courses? Who gets to take IB courses, right? Those those college prep and rigorous courses, who gets to take them and why? Typically, it's white, middle, upper class students. So how are we holding our schools accountable to diversity? How are we making sure that being a diverse person doesn't mean that you go automatically into special education or a school-to-prison pipeline? Are we asking those questions? Are we thinking about school beyond our own kiddo or our grandbaby?
All important questions. And that's what we're trying to create with our group, with RACE. We're trying to have these conversations. We're trying to provide opportunities for those to mentor and be a part of the community and really promote healing and reconciliation. We don't have it all right. We don't know 100% of the answers. We don't even necessarily know what we're doing. We're willing to admit that. But show us a blueprint and a timeline and books and books that tell you how reconciliation can be done.
Right.
We're open. And that's the call to you, is how can you contribute? It's so easy to sit back and critique and sink into, denial or social amnesia or white fragility, just leave the room. But what we're asking you is to participate. We need you to participate in this mission and this hope for reconciliation. And we are open to ideas. We are open to ways we achieve these goals.
Mm-hmm.
And we completely rely on the community to come together to bring that. So that's kind of our open invite to everyone here as we wrap up is, what's the discussion at your dinner table at Thanksgiving like? How can you change that? What do you prioritize your time with throughout the week in your community in Muncie?
Mm-hmm.
There is lots to do, lots of ways to get involved. And so we want to encourage that. And we actually have a next month meeting plan, which sometimes is rare in our case. But we do want to invite you to our next meeting, which is August 16th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Connection Corner Library in the Whiteley neighborhood. And we're going to be showing a film that's recently come out, I Am Not Your Negro. It's about James Baldwin, who is an amazing writer. And it will really bring up some discussion, and we have a discussion guide to go along with it. So we invite all of you to join us there. And if you can't make that meeting, we have meetings once a month, and a lot of the upcoming meetings, every other month we're going to be doing thought-provoking film screenings and
mm-hmm.
discussions. So those are some things to keep in mind. And
we're working on childcare. So one, kids are welcome, and they can be involved in whatever way you see fit.
Absolutely.
And kick it with childcare too.
Well, thank you for your time. We're going to move on.
Is there a question?
Should
we ask a question?
Do we
have time for...
Afterwards?